The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Good afternoon. Get ready for Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker. No matter what role you play in leadership of your organization or business, you are sure to get helpful secrets that will improve that role. Now here's your host, Dr. Robert Denker.
Hello, good day, and welcome to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we'll be exploring the topic of the hidden language of business. That is, we'll be learning about how to better understand workplace politics, power, and influence. Specifically, we'll be learning about the biggest political blunders people make in the workplace, mistakes that are so damaging they can doom most people to unsatisfying and never fully realized careers. To help us navigate this journey today, our guest has the experience and knowledge to help all of us take practical steps to do just that. I'm referring to the popular and well-respected management consultant and author, Margaret Morford. Margaret is president of the HR Edge, an international management consulting and training company, and is a recognized business expert who is often quoted in newspapers and magazines across the country, including the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, and USA Today. In addition, she appears on a regular basis on local ABC, CBS, and Fox television affiliates. Margaret is the author of two best-selling books, the first entitled Management Courage, Having the Heart of a Lion, and the second, The Hidden Language of Business, Workplace Politics, Power, and Influence, and that book is the focus of our dialogue today. So given that, let's find out more. Margaret, welcome to Leadership Leverage.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, it's a delight to have you here and very interested to get into this topic that you're calling the hidden language of business. Now, you've written a number of articles in books already in your career, and I'm always curious to know from our authors and consultants such as yourself, was there a particular trigger point for you in writing this book at this point in time?
Well, yes. I watched more people end their careers because they don't understand this stuff. And mm-hmm. when you think about it, most people get fired these days or picked to be downsized, usually because of politics. They give you a standard reason for why they're letting you go, but at the bottom of all of it, it's normally one of three political reasons.
What are they?
Your organization has changed direction and you haven't figured that out.
Okay.
Or you have run afoul of somebody who's very powerful in an organization. Or you haven't built a wide enough network to support you when you make a mistake, because everybody makes mistakes. What you want to have happen when you make a mistake is that you've got this wide group of supporters who say, yeah, that was a big mistake, but you know, that's not the norm for him. Or that's not the norm for her, as opposed to, you've seen this in organizations, when you don't have a lot of supporters and someone makes a mistake, everybody sort of piles on top of that.
I've seen that in, you know, my own career when I was in corporate America. Absolutely.
Yes, we sense, you know, in corporate America, you sense somebody's weak, and everybody kind of jumps on the bandwagon. Well, if you've got a wide network of supporters, you can stop that from happening to you. And I've seen some people survive some pretty major career gaffes because they had great supporters in their organization.
And Margaret, we'll talk more about that issue of building networks and having the support a little bit later, because I want to get back to that. It's important. But I do want to ask you, because I found this extremely interesting, in your book you state, and I'm paraphrasing, I think, but you state, people who say they don't play politics are destined to fail. Now, if this is indeed the case, why is it that more people, I guess, number one, haven't gotten this message? Do you think it's because they're not looking at politics from the right vantage point, the right perspective?
Well, I think it's two things. Politics has a very negative connotation. And one of the points that I make in the book very early on is this is positive politics. This is understanding the unspoken stuff that's going on in your organization and learning how to read that well, stay in line with it, and then accomplish your agenda within sort of the confines of these sort of unspoken white lines. Most of the stuff on workplace politics is pretty mean stuff. It's about how to use people, how to step on people to get what you need, and I would never be in favor of that. But I do think you need to be savvy, and that's different from being ruthless. You know, anytime you get two people together in the workplace, you're going to have politics because it's about how people's agendas get accomplished and how the work gets done. And people have to understand that. Politics, I always ask this when I do a workshop on this. I'll start off by saying, how many of you have had the experience in the workplace where you've been right and you've made people mad?
And actually, I bet a lot of hands go up, right?
Everybody's hand goes up because we've all done it.
Right.
I had one guy in a session who raised his hand and he goes, oh, Margaret, I was so right. They didn't talk to me for 30 days. I said, you do understand that's not effective. And politics is really the difference between being right and being effective. Being right and being effective is the only thing that counts in the workplace today. Being right isn't just sufficient.
And I think that's a very, very key point for our listeners to take note of, particularly in today's workplace and what's happening out there. I wanted you on the show because a lot of people who may have just heard this are saying, yeah, you know, that makes sense, but, you know, how do I improve? And I loved your book for the reason that you've really outlined what I'm going to call kind of rules of the road. You refer to them as the 44 political rules. And I'd like to talk just about a few of them because, unfortunately, we don't have the time to get through all of those. But in particular, I wonder if you could speak about the one that says, not speaking badly about your boss. Could you tell us your insights here?
Absolutely. And are there some bad bosses to work for out there? There absolutely are. At one point in my career, I worked for somebody that I affectionately refer to now as the spawn of Satan. Tough manager. And you know, every time I say that, people laugh because they've all had a manager like that. Now, here's
right.
The good news about bad bosses. Everybody knows who they are in an organization. As a matter of fact, they're really easy to spot because organizations always have to recruit on the outside for these bosses because nobody wants to work for them. We have to grab somebody unsuspecting off the street to hire for them because no one else internally will take the job, no matter what the job is.
Wow.
Now, everyone knows, and they talk about it. It's whispered about, eye-rolling, all of that. If you work for one of these individuals, the good news is everybody knows. They're tough. They're hard bosses. In some cases, they're mean. But if you never say anything bad about a boss everybody considers to be horrible, you send several really positive messages about you throughout the organization. One, you send the message you can work for anybody. You send the message that you can work under pressure, you have nerves of steel, and more important, that you are loyal no matter who it is that you report to. All of those are really great positive messages, and you send every single one of them by simply keeping your mouth shut and not adding to what people say about your boss. Now, let me.
And Margaret, though, I would think that's so hard to do for most people because if they're working for this bad boss, there's probably not a lot of communication back and forth between the boss and them. But there is a lot of communication with your cohort group, your peers, talking about how bad the boss is. So that's tough to do, right?
It is top, and one of the reasons that I think this rule is so important is if you can get fixed in your mind, I enhance my reputation every time I resist the temptation to jump in and add to that. That's what politics is all about. It's about picking your moment, or in some cases, not picking your moment. Now, let me sort of add an addendum to that. Don't
Please.
Speak well about a bad boss because you'll look clueless. Just don't say anything. You don't want to look weak or like anybody can roll over you. What you want to look is loyal and able to handle anything.
So give us an example then. If, you know, I'm sitting with a group of peers, I work for this terrible boss, this almost anti-Christ figure, and they're just on a big coffee rant. They're going on and on and on, and they kind of look my way. Do I just shrug my shoulders?
No, I don't think you shrug your shoulders. And I'll give you a real live example.
Okay.
The nice part about being a consultant is that you're in and out of 12 to 15 organizations a month, so you get to see a lot of people managing. There's one particular organization I do some work for, and one of their very senior-level managers is tough. Micromanager from the word go. And everyone sits around and talks about this particular individual. In fact, they tell stories. And they actually talk about the story of the week. Everybody talks about their worst experience. And one of the people in senior management has really taken this to heart, and her cohort group said to her one day, happened to be a female, said, "You never say anything." She goes, "It doesn't help. We report to this individual. That's not going to change. You know, I just believe when I work for somebody in not talking about them behind their back." I think that's, and she is very well respected for that. And everybody goes, gosh, if she worked for me, I'd want her to feel that way. So I think her stock went way up in her group, and she's considered to be extremely loyal. And she's a confidant for everybody in that group because they trust her.
Right, and I think that's a marvelous story, and a way that you answered my question, which really was from my own experience. So you helped me in that as well, and I want to thank you. I've got some other questions that I want to ask, particularly about some more of these 44 political rules, but we need to take a commercial break and to pay our sponsors. And when we come back, let's continue on that vein. You're listening to Leadership Leverage right here on Voice America Business. Please stay with us.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Since the year 2000, our RDN partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Ready to get your business started with a flying leap? Tune in to the Startup Business Coach Show with the startup business coach himself, Dr. Dwayne D. Jakes. Dr. Jakes is the author of Top 10 Fail-Proof Ways Startup Businesses Can Succeed in a Floundering Global Economy. At each program, Dr. Jakes and his guest experts will explain the concepts of organizational development and provide examples designed to maximize your ROI. The Startup Business Coach Show broadcasts live every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker. And today on Leadership Leverage, we're talking with Margaret Morford, international consultant and best-selling author, about her recent book entitled The Hidden Language of Business, Workplace Politics, Power, and Influence. Margaret, before we went to commercial break, we were talking specifically about one of your 44 political rules, and that one was about not speaking badly about your boss. And I wanted to know if you had any concluding comments on your insights there.
Well, you had mentioned a bad boss you had, and I mentioned earlier that I had one individual I worked for that I affectionately referred to as the spawn of Satan. When I left that organization, within 6 months, everybody who had worked in that department below me left, and several of them challenged me and said, "Why didn't you tell us?" Because it wouldn't have helped. And my job as a manager is to let that stuff rain down on me and not rain it down on the people that report to me. And you get a great deal of respect for doing that, for taking a tough situation and dealing with it and not exposing other people to it. I just think it's a very smart way to conduct yourself.
And again, some great insights into what is a very stressful and emotional situation when you do work for somebody who is a bad boss, or as you like to say, the spawn of Satan. You know, on the same path, you also remark on another rule, and that one is this. One should not disclose your personal life or particularly disclose things about your health. Can you tell us what you mean? As many leaders, you know, have been encouraged in some of the recent literature on leadership to be personal, or to be authentic. We hear those terms battered around quite a bit. So what's your take here?
Well, I do think you need to be personal, and I do think you need to be authentic. But there are some things that are way too much information for anybody that's working with you. You've all had the experience where someone's had surgery and you inquire about them, and they describe their surgery in excruciating detail. That's not helpful. I hope that you have friends at work. Everybody should. You should be the kind of person everybody would like to do more than just work with. But there are lines that I think people cross, and the further up in an organization you are, the more circumspect I think you need to be. I tell everybody this. No one, I'm going to tell you a truth that no one else will share with you, which is that no one is interested in your health. Your health is only fascinating to you. I mean, think about it, Rob. You have to pay, even your doctor's not interested in your health. You have to pay him or her to talk to them about it. And frankly, I've had people show me their scars at work. That's just not a professional thing to be doing. And frankly, after you've spent 15 minutes describing your hemorrhoid surgery to me, I'm never going to look at you the same in the workplace again. Just don't do it.
That's a visual, Margaret. I think we don't even want to discuss
exactly.
Any further there. But, you know, we have seen that rule been applied certainly to what I would call a high-profile CEOs. I mean, of recent, there was a CEO of the Sara Lee Corporation who had a serious illness and ended up then resigning. And, of course, most recently in the news about Apple and Steve Jobs. So we do see some of this really playing out for that level of leader, but you're also suggesting that just in the workplace, politically, don't go there.
Well, we talked about health, but it also applies to your personal life. If you're single, you don't need to discuss a whole lot of your dating life, particularly if you're a manager with people. You don't need to discuss a fight you've had with your spouse or significant other. It doesn't add anything to your reputation. You don't need to talk about the last crazy thing you did or the last crazy thing maybe your family did, because you do not want people going, wow, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. It doesn't enhance your reputation. It's entertaining. It's one of the reasons we watch the reality TV shows, because we do have a fascination with people acting strange or badly. That doesn't mean we want to be working for them or with them.
Well, that's right, and I think perhaps some of us watch that as a barometer about maybe how crazy or more than crazy our life is compared to the characters that appear on those particular television shows. I'm wondering, from your consulting experience, you know, having worked with many well-known organizations through the years, is there a particular political rule? You have 44. We've talked about two of those. But is there a particular political rule that seems to have a reoccurring frequency? And if there is, why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think there are two that stick out for me.
Okay.
They both have to do with communication. The biggest complaint I hear all the time from employees, from clients, is that we don't have good communication. Now, that takes a lot of different forms, but the two rules that are in the book that I think really resonate about that, one is always confront people in private. If you disagree with somebody, if at all possible, that should be a discussion you have between the two of you. It is not a good discussion to have in a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
It is not good to take somebody on in front of an audience, because nothing makes them dig in harder to their viewpoint than a bunch of people watching that discussion. The second communication one is about delivering bad news face-to-face. So often, with all of the electronic communication that's out there, people will opt out for that rather than come and sit down with somebody and talk with them, particularly if they think it's going to be unpleasant. And I think it's very important, particularly if it's bad news, that you come and meet with them face-to-face. Now, you don't need to be foolish about it, and there's a great way to set that conversation up. When you sit down to tell somebody, if I had bad news for you, Rob, I'm your manager, I'm a coworker, whatever mm-hmm. it is, I would sit down with you and say, Rob, what I'm about to tell you, you're not going to like, but I respect you way too much not to come and tell you face to face. You've done a couple of things at that point. First of all, people are less likely to fly off the handle when you don't surprise them. I've already told you ahead of time that what comes next you're not going to like, so you have a chance to steel yourself and kind of take a calming breath, which is a good thing for anybody. The second thing is it gives you a few minutes to sort of get your thoughts together. It becomes a matter of respect. Mm-hmm. I respect you, and that's why I'm here face to face. 90% of the time what you will hear somebody say back once you tell them whatever it is they'll go, you're right, I don't like that, but I do appreciate the fact that you would come and talk with me about this. So then you have a much saner, calmer discussion about an unpleasant subject. If you can't do it face-to-face, if you're working globally with people that are in lots of different time zones, the second
sure.
best thing is to call them. But more important, say you're dealing with somebody in the Pacific Rim. What time, their time, does their day start? And get up in the middle of the night if you have to and call them right as their day is starting. They're fresher. They're going to be able to be more resilient because you're not at the end of a very long day for them. And they will be so impressed over the fact that you inconvenienced yourself to make it as palatable as possible for them. And the conversation will go a lot better. That's really a lot of what politics is all about. It's not about lying. It's about setting things up so that you get the best outcome.
I mean, in a large sense, Margaret, what I hear as a theme through this dialogue, this discussion we're having today, is really to have a lot of respect in the workplace.
Yes, that that's why this book is so different from what I've seen that's been written, because it's really about doing the right thing, but doing the right thing in the right way.
Absolutely. You know, I have a question for you. We're talking about, because I was asking the question about, is there a particular political rule that seems to have frequency? And you talked about this issue of communication, but you talked about always confront in private. Any advice to, again, if you're working for a bad boss that may enjoy public confrontation, that may want in a staff meeting that they hold to, you know, encourage people to confront each other?
Well, that's a tough one, because there are people that get a real charge out of watching everybody sort of go at it.
Right.
I think the calmer you are, you get your facts lined up, you do your homework, you work behind the lines to get everything lined up so you get a good outcome in a meeting. And I'll give you a great example. I worked for an organization where we would promote people to director once a year. That was the way our CEO wanted to do it. So all six of the VPs would wind up in a conference room. We would put forward candidates. Everyone knew that it was a bloodbath because there were probably only three slots. It's a big deal to be a director in this company because it changed your bonus plan. It made you eligible for stock options. So it was huge. And it was pretty bloody, the whole meeting. The one year I wanted to put forward somebody on my staff to be made a director, I spent 8 months making sure that this person worked on some high-profile projects with several of the other VPs, several of the other people that were going to be in this room, so that when her name came up and she really impressed them with what she had done, she deserved to be a director. But again, I'm fighting for one of a few slots that are available. And when I put her name forward, the two other VPs say, I absolutely agree on that one. People almost fell out of their chair. Now, I spent 8 or 9 months doing my homework and making all of this happen, so I got a good outcome. Those are the kinds of things. If you understand what you're dealing with, then what is the strategy by which you get your agenda accomplished? That's really what we're talking about. How do I, in my case, how do I get her promoted to director?
Margaret, great advice. And we need to take another commercial break, unfortunately, but we do have to pay our sponsors. You're listening to Leadership Leverage here on Voice America Business. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker. Stay with us. We'll be right back in about 2 minutes.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Entrepreneurial Insights is your weekly excursion into the world of business ownership. Presented by Sunbelt Business Brokers, the leading business brokerage and intermediary firm in the world, Entrepreneurial Insights will examine critical issues that impact both existing and prospective business owners. If you own or want to own a small business, listen for Entrepreneurial Insights with John Davies, Pino Bocchinello, and Matt Ottaway, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Since the year 2000, RDN Partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RDN Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
are listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Danker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and today we're talking with Margaret Morford, international consultant and best-selling author, about her most recent book entitled The Hidden Language of Business, Workplace Politics, Power, and Influence. Margaret, before we went to commercial break, I want to talk to you about this issue that you really drill home in, and you write very powerfully about it in your book, and that's the need to form a good network. Can you tell our listeners more about this?
Yes. We talked earlier about the fact that this will support you when you make a mistake, but this network also will help you get promoted because, you know, if you've got a champion and a very powerful champion, people can rise to the top pretty quickly. One of the things I talk about in the book is how do you tell who has power and influence and who doesn't? And the mistake a lot of people make is that they believe that title conveys power, and it does not. There are lots of people that hold very high-level positions in organizations that aren't necessarily power brokers, just as there are people that don't have a title but can be extremely powerful in organizations. You want to not only have a wide network, lots of supporters, but you also want to have powerful supporters, because one of those individuals in your network is worth 10 of anybody else. So not only do you want to build a wide network, but you want to put really influential people in that network. And that's both internal to your organization and external as well.
Margaret, if I identify somebody internally who's not my boss, who's not even, let's say, part of my function, that I perceive to be, you know, someone that I need to network with, that has, as you say, power in the organization, regardless of their title, how do I begin that relationship? What's a way to approach that individual?
Well, there are a couple of different things you can do. One is if they're serving on projects and committees, see if you can't get on a project or committee with them so that you get a chance to work alongside them. And more important, they get a chance to work alongside you and see what kind of work you do. If that's not possible, there is nothing more flattering than calling somebody and saying, you are well respected in our organization, and I am looking for a mentor. I'd like to see, and this is always the easiest way to ask it, I'd like to see if you would be willing to mentor me for the next year. And you always ask for a year, because if these people are smart and bright, they're busy. So they could see themselves doing maybe a year commitment and think about how much time you would need over that year as far as mentoring goes, and ask them specifically for that. You would say to them, I figured out that I need probably about an hour a month, and here's a hint. These people are really smart, really bright, really busy.
Right.
The most you can ask for is an hour. Well, if I'm the person on the other end, one, it's the most flattering phone call you can ever get from anybody. Two, I go, okay, I could do 12 hours over a year. And then after that, say, I'll do this. This is a huge favor to me. I'll do this any way you want to do this. It would be my pleasure once a month to buy you dinner, and I'll come with a list of prepared things I want to ask you about. You really want them to accept the dinner option, because nobody has dinner for just an hour. If they get interested, they'll spend an hour or 2 hours with you. One, it'll help you with your career, and it'll build a relationship with them. Now, if they say, no, I can't do dinner, then I'll buy you lunch. I'm happy to do coffee with you, whatever works for you. I want to accommodate your schedule. Now, one of the things I say in the book is you ask them for a year, but at the end of a year, you don't call and say, okay, it's the end of the year, will you re-up for another year?
Right.
just keep calling. By then, you've probably built a good relationship with them, and they don't even think about it as a mentoring thing anymore. And that's a good thing. You want
and that is a good thing. And I think that's some powerful advice that you've just given our listeners on how to begin that special relationship. And you're right. You did begin this whole dialogue today by talking about how networking is important. And those that don't get it really don't understand part of this hidden language of business and often end up in careers that are less than satisfying or perhaps never fully realized. Let's talk about some natural transitions in organizations, if we could. And I'd like your perspectives here, because clearly all those folks who are working in organizations are going to continue to face transitions. Of a new boss would be a major transition that people are going to face. Mergers and acquisitions, particularly in the most recent economy, that activity is up. So what is the language that these people need to speak when these type of changes come upon them?
Well, I think the most important thing is not to be negative about change at all, because when you get a reputation for being change-averse, you stagnate. Change changes the reality of what's going to happen in organizations. And when organizations are struggling, they almost always reorg, which means there's a constant shifting of players all the time. Your boss today may not be your boss tomorrow, so you need to be really careful about not talking about anyone in the organization negatively, not just your boss, but anyone. I can remember a company that went through a reorg, and a particular manager got out from under their vice president that they didn't like. And so they went around the entire organization talking about, oh, my gosh, this is the best thing that ever happened to me. What a jerk, what a jerk. And then 2 years later, they reorged, and he was back under that particular VP. And I remember the VP saying, I called him into my office after the announcement had been made and said, well, I guess you feel like you're being visited by the ghost of Christmas past.
Wow.
Yes, that's a really bad moment in your career. If you're being shopped as an acquisition, you want the acquirers to think well of you. There's one particular rule that went in the book, thanks to a gentleman named Mike Thompson, and it really speaks to this particular situation. He said that he had saved 6 months of salary. It took him forever to do it. He actually affectionately refers to it as his go-to-hell fund. He says, here's what it buys me. As my organization starts to reorg, or if the word is out that we're for sale, people start hunkering down and doing crazy stuff to try to protect their territory. And all they really do is make people think they're weak and that they have to do these kinds of things. He says, because I have 6 months of salary saved, I just continue to do what I need to do. If the acquiring company wants information, if we got to do due diligence, I do it. Because no matter how this turns out, I know I'm going to be okay. He said in one particular acquisition where his company was bought, he was one of the few people that got retained. And the acquiring company said, you were the only one that was helpful, that wasn't trying to protect their territory, that was interested in moving the business forward, and so we thought we wanted somebody like this on our team.
So really some healthy thinking there by him doing this preparation in advance, this planning, I think allowed him to have focus and a certain confidence.
Yes, and if you don't have 6 months of salary saved, well, I highly recommend it because it will give you peace of mind and, as he said, keep you from doing, he calls it stupid stuff. If nothing else, remind yourself that you can't stop it. It's going to happen. So the question becomes, what kind of reputation do you want to have with both parties when it does?
And again, that's some great advice because your reputation really is all you have.
It really is, and politics is a lot about what do people perceive about you in the organization. Do they think you're smart? Do they think that you're change-averse? Do they think you're creative? I mean, all of these kinds of things. depend upon how you act in the workplace.
Very good. Margaret, we've got about 3 minutes before we have to take another commercial break here on Leadership Leverage, but I did want to start to talk to you about this whole issue of technology in the workplace, because clearly technology has become a big part of our lives and a prerequisite, or perhaps even a better phrase, a requirement for any employee that they have to embrace. And as a result of this, could you talk about the ramifications of this electronic communication in view of speaking the hidden language? What is critical for us to know here?
Well, all of the studies on communication tell you that 7% of your communication, of your message, comes from the words you use. The other 93 comes from your tone of voice, your face, your facial expression, the cadence, the speed at which you deliver the message. So understand, when you're using email, IMing, texting, whatever electronic medium you're using, you've lost 93% of your ability to communicate with that other individual, which means what you do needs to be very well crafted. The mistake people make is that they have come to consider electronic communication conversation, and it's not. It's communication, but it's not conversation, and you have to understand that distinction. Someone just recently said, my son used to send me stuff and he put LOL, and I thought it meant lots of love until I got something from the CFO that said LOL, and they went running into the CFO saying, you can't do that. Now, see, there's a huge misunderstanding.
There is a huge misunderstanding, right. I think I love you is 143, in case you need to know that one.
Yes, please don't use that in your business communication.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and I always
I'm laughing here because that's hysterical about the LOL. Margaret, let me finish my laughter. We need to take a commercial break. And then when we come back, I want to talk more about this interesting topic that you've written about called the hidden language of business. You're listening to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Denker, here on Voice America Business. We'll be right back.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Are you looking to soar with the eagles instead of being grounded with the turkeys? Why not have a gorilla help you out? Listen every week for Innovate, Leap Out of the Bowl with host Joby Dixon. Joby has made a living out of helping organizations and individuals become more creative, inventive, and innovative. The show closely parallels Joby's book of the same name. It'll include the process to innovate, how to rewire your brain for creativity, exercises, case studies, and more. Tune in to Innovate, Leap Out of the Bowl, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Business.
Since the year 2000, RD and partners have been helping client organizations across North America and Europe achieve breakthrough performance by providing practical solutions for talent identification, talent development, and improved team performance. Our services include executive coaching and onboarding, sales selection tools, validated to predict sales success, web-based pre-employment and development assessments for executive, managerial, supervisory and professional positions, talent reviews and team coaching, as well as competency modeling, including web-based custom 360 surveys. At RD and Partners, we don't arrive with ready-made solutions. Our service offerings have to fit the context of every aspect of your company, its markets, competitors, strategy, and culture. Please contact us today at rdpusa.com or by calling 888-600-7457. We look forward to helping you be successful by building and retaining your high-performance talent.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Leadership Leverage with your host, Dr. Robert Denker. If you have a question or comment about today's program for Dr. Danker or his guests, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or if you prefer, send an email to info@rdpusa.com. Now back to Leadership Leverage.
Welcome back to Leadership Leverage. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Danker, and today on Leadership Leverage, we're talking with Margaret Morford, international consultant and best-selling author, about her most recent book, which is entitled The Hidden Language of Business, Workplace Politics, Power, and Influence. Margaret, before we went on to commercial break, we were talking about technology and how it's become a big part of our lives. And I wanted to conclude that segment with yet another question about technology. And that is, what's your advice or suggestions on how we can deal with what I will call the stress that comes with this 24/7, 365 workplace that, because of technology, we're really never off the grid. We never really can hide. Any advice here?
Yes. Be very clear. As those lines get really blurred, you need to really keep track of what's my personal life, what's my professional life. Now, in a 24/7 responsive environment, you don't want to be the person that's not responsive. But you also don't want to run your life with your face constantly in your BlackBerry or, you know, constantly on the phone. I think you've got to set some parameters. One of the things that I did with a group that I was part of was when someone would go on vacation, we would commit to keep their desk rolling while they were gone so they wouldn't come back with a pile of work to do getting back from vacation. But what I said, in order for us to do that, I need you to call in once a day. We'll keep it short. We'll keep it quick. But if we've got questions, there are things we can deal with while you're gone if you'll just call in case we've got something we need to ask you before we tackle this. And everybody thought that was a great idea. It wasn't a burden, but I also said, when this person calls in, they're on vacation. Make it fast, make it quick. If you don't need to talk to them, don't talk to them. Now, the experience I had when I would call in, because I was the manager, is they would keep me on the phone for 45 minutes, and I go, come on, guys, I'm here to answer questions you've got, but you guys don't stay on the phone 45 minutes, and I'm on vacation just like you are. And they went, oh, gosh, we just wanted to chat with you because we hadn't seen you.
Sure.
So you got to draw parameters. I think you do need to be responsive, but I think everybody needs some downtime. We're seeing more and more literature about people taking those unplugged vacations. I left the country where we weren't going to have a whole lot of Wi-Fi. And so I had someone who responded to everyone saying, Margaret is out of the country, she'll be back. And they had the rudiments where they could keep my desk moving while I was gone. You need to do that for your coworkers so that they'll do it for you when you're gone.
Very good advice again. You know, I'm wondering, in your research and also as well as your consultative work with organizations, have you found any gender differences at all in relation to this hidden language of business? In other words, do women or men speak it better?
Well, an interesting thing, when my publisher called me and when the politics book hit the market, it's the second book I've written, he said, interestingly enough, Margaret, the large majority of people who are buying your book, at least at the onset, were female. So clearly women don't believe that they do very well at this. He said, I'll also point out to you that when your first book called Management Courage, Having the Heart of a Lion hit the market, mostly men bought it. So I think there are differences. I think women are very aware that because women haven't really been in the work world up until about the last 50 or 60 years, I mean, particularly C-suite stuff and middle management, they're very aware that they're playing catch-up on some of this. Now, I will tell you, I see men make as many political mistakes as women do. I just think men think they're better than they are at it.
That probably is true.
Now, I'll tell you something interesting. You ask about gender. Let me talk about age groups for just a minute.
Okay.
This book has been wildly popular with the Gen Yers, and the seminars are wildly popular with them because they are very aware that they're smart, they're bright. Electronic communication is really the medium they're most comfortable in, and that's not really where the politics take place. And they understand that they don't read these kind of social cues very well, and they want to get better at it. And this is a good explanation for think about the message behind this. They're great learners, and they're always looking to learn a new skill, and this is a skill that they see as not being part of their skill set, so they're looking for stuff that allows them to get more savvy about this without compromising their integrity.
And Margaret, let's talk a little bit about the younger generation, the Gen X and Gen Yers here for a moment. So what advice do you have for those people in those age groups who are just emerging as leaders in an organization today? They might have their first line supervisory role, or they may have a title of manager. What advice would you give them to really begin to understand this hidden language of business right out of the gate?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of these, when I put this, it originally started as a workshop because I saw more people mess up their careers because they didn't understand this. And I went, I need to teach this. So I started with, how would I teach this? Well, what are all the things I wish somebody had told me? So I started with 18 rules, and then I called two people that I consider to be very savvy and very smart about this stuff. They gave me another 5 to 7 rules. So we started out with 25 5 years ago. You can see we're at 44. And about once or twice a year, I'll see somebody do something in the workplace, and I'll go, I need to put a rule in about that.
Okay.
If someone doesn't tell you that, a lot of this is a product of mistakes I made, and you don't get to unmake those. The nice part about this is if you can learn the rules before you violate them, you're going to get off to a much better start. You're not going to have a lot of the starts and stops that people have as they go through these kinds of lessons. It would be nice not to have the really painful lesson, but to understand it and just keep yourself between the white lines on this.
So, Margaret, again, if I was, coming into the workplace, maybe I've been there 2 or 3 years, just got promoted to my first management role, what one or two rules should I really pay attention to?
Don't make enemies.
Okay.
I don't care how difficult they are. Don't make enemies, because those things always come back to bite you. Be very circumspect about what you say about people in the workplace. And I always tell folks, don't take somebody on. If you're going to take somebody on, you better make sure that when you knock them down, they don't get up again, because you've made yourself an enemy for life, and they're going to come after you. It's just not smart to get sideways with anybody.
Very good. Margaret, is there anything that I haven't asked you today that you'd like to share with our listeners about the research, your experience, and your book?
Well, there's a chapter about forging a better relationship with your boss, and I ask this question a lot. Do you manage your relationship with your boss, or do you just try not to make him or her mad? Most people manage not to make their boss mad. They don't think about, is there a way I can up that and have a different kind of relationship with my boss? And I run them through 8 or 9 questions you got to ask yourself about where you are in your relationship with your boss. And they're pretty simple questions, but people don't think about them very often.
Well, give us a few.
Okay. For instance, when your boss needs advice and counsel, who does your boss go talk to? It's one individual. And I always say, this is like out of the Godfather movies. One of the most powerful people in the movie is the consigliere, who's the advisor to the Godfather. Who's your boss's advisor, and find out who that is and go and get to know that person. Here's someone your boss values their advice. When they need counsel, this is who they go see. You want this person to know who you are. You want them to think well of you and express those good feelings with your boss. Get very smart about how your boss likes to communicate. We tend to communicate with people the way we like to be communicated with. For instance, if you want something from me, the easiest way to come get it is to come meet with me face-to-face. I have a much harder time telling people no when I'm looking at them than over the phone or by email. That's not true about a lot of other people. I worked for a boss who preferred voicemail because he could return 6 messages running between gates at an airport than he could typing them out on a BlackBerry. So you need to, how do they like to communicate? It's not how are you most comfortable, but what works for them. I wonder.
So again, it's understanding their style and in a sense putting yourself into their shoes.
And here's a very simple question.
Sure.
What's their best time? They have a best time and they have a best day of the week. And if you want something out of them, that's the time you go talk to them. We tend to go and talk to people when we feel strong. And that's not always the smartest thing. If your boss is not a morning person, don't go see your boss at 8:05 in the morning to ask for something. I'm much more likely to give it to you at the end of the day when the phones have stopped ringing and I have time to kind of take a deep breath and think about what it is that you want. It's a better time of day to ask me.
Excellent advice, Margaret. I really appreciate that piece of advice and all the advice that you've given us today here on Leadership Leverage. Unfortunately, our time is up. Very quickly, if people want to get in contact with you, how should they do that?
Well, the best way is to go to our website, which is www.thehredge.net. If they want to order the book, it's on Amazon. Both of the books are on the Amazon. And again, if they're welcome to call me. 615 is the number, 371-8200. I answer a lot of questions for people.
Excellent. Margaret, again, thank you for being part of today's show. It was a delight to have you with us.
Rob, thank you very much for having me.
And to all of our listeners, I want to thank you for listening to Leadership Leverage. Until next time, this is your host, Dr. Robert Denker, and the doctor is out.
Thank you again for tuning in to Leadership Leverage this afternoon. Please tune in again next Tuesday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time for another edition of Leadership Leverage with Dr. Robert Denker on the Voice America Business Channel.